By All Means Necessary is a book that looks at how China's resource quest is changing the world. What's the impact on issues of governance, on global security, and on the global economy? It really tries to cut through what I think has become a lot of hype surrounding this issue. You know, China is either sort of the savior of the global economy or it's the scourge of good governance, and look very much on the ground at the impacts that China is having through its investment and through its trade, countries in Southeast Asia, in Latin America, in Africa, and even here in North America.
This resource quest, as you write about, has become a bit of a controversy for the rest of the world, especially when it comes to things like rare earths, which are very limited, and China is trying to scoop up as much as possible.
I think one of the things that we found is certainly that the numbers are striking. If you just look on the face of it, you know, by 2010, China accounted for, you know, 38% of global copper demand, 42% of aluminum, a similar number for other metals, you know, also about a quarter of the world's soybeans, and, you know, roughly 10 to 11% of global oil consumption. And when you look at something like rare earths, China already, you know, commands upwards of 95% of the production of these rare earths, most of which are, in fact, within their own territory. So they have not made an enormous play for rare earths outside their territory. But in general, we do see that China is commanding a large portion of the world's resources. But it's not surprising, right? This is a country that is close to 20% of the world's population. And so is it unreasonable, in fact, that they are consuming, you know, 10% of global oil? It's also the second largest economy in the world. And it's been growing at double digits, you know, for almost 15, 20 years until recently. So, you know, we try to put things within context and also to make the point that if you look back through history, you can see that all rising nations dating back to, you know, ancient Athens and certainly through to Japan have sought resources outside their borders to fuel their economies. The numbers are striking, but we do want to keep it in context of, you know, other rising powers through history and indeed just how large China's economy is.
And within that context, do we see China's economy beginning to transform as Japan's did and other industrialized nations?
I think we're potentially at an inflection point. One of the things that our book makes a point of noting is that, you know, the past is not prologue. We shouldn't look at what China has done before, you know, over the past, say, 30 years of going out for resources in a more aggressive way as what is going to continue. Because if China is able to rebalance its economy, to move away from investment to consumption-led growth, if it's able to make that same kind of transition, if it is able to become more efficient in terms of its resource use, to conserve more resources, then we can see a fundamentally different sort of pattern of energy consumption, a different mix emerging. So we don't want to say that what has come before will necessarily come in the future, but we haven't hit that point yet where we're confident that China is making that transition. And I think one of the interesting things as well is that even when you have a situation, for example, now where China's faced with a sort of overcapacity in steel, you still have the National Development Reform Commission, the Chinese government, telling Chinese steel companies to go out, right, and get more iron ore, not because they need it for continued infrastructure development within China, but because the government feels it's important for China to have a sort of resource security as well as to have a voice in the global trading stage. And so there are different and competing interests that we find in our book among the various actors in China about, you know, how to go out for resources, when to go out for resources, and how much, in fact, to access.
As the title of your book suggests, By All Means Necessary, we've seen a very aggressive China with respect to the South China Sea, East China Sea, and in mineral-rich areas that have overlapping claims by other countries.
I think it's important to disentangle the resource quest from other concerns, namely in the East and South China Sea. It's certainly as much about resources as it is about nationalism and sovereignty claims. Probably, you know, one of the most important findings that we had was that there has been this sort of understanding that China is the world's largest source of overseas investment in resources, and it's gobbling up supplies and producing resource scarcity and rising prices. But what we found was really that China is still a second-tier investor in much of the resource world, and that really when you look at how China accesses resources, it does it much more through trade than through investment. And its impact isn't nearly as big as many people believe in terms of investment. So, for example, in Africa, China ranks fourth as the fourth largest investor in Africa, not the first. It's third in Latin America, it's third in Southeast Asia, and a very distant third, for example, in Southeast Asia after the European Union and Japan. When we think about China, you know, going out and grabbing land, here too it's third after Canada and the United States. I think the sort of message that we really want to get across with our book is, in many respects, its impact is much more nuanced and much more complicated than we tend to assume. And it's important for us to understand those nuances and those complications, because only then can we figure out, you know, how we want to respond to China's resource quest.